Game 3 in Washington caps up 2-0 in Tampa Bay, and we did find out the good news. An extra hour for the Metro train in D.C., both for Game 3 and Game 4. That just, it's so bizarre to me. Our next guest, he's the one that always shines light on the bizarre stories for me. He is the senior hockey writer, our NHL insider, an all-around good guy. Brought to you by Metro Ford, speaking of all-around good guys. And they got the new F-150 in. You got to check it out. I was looking at them today. They are spectacular. He is Chris Johnston from Sportsnet. How are you?
I'm doing well, Rob. That's the issue in Washington with the Metro is the sore point there. So that's a big story for them.
Are you up on that?
City, people complain about it.
But are you up on that story? Have you seen what happened the last half hour? I wouldn't say it's controversial, but it is weird, isn't it?
It is weird. I guess Qatar feels it needs some positive discussion. I mean, look, we're talking about it on radio in Calgary right now, so maybe they're getting the bang for their buck. It's a very strange story, though. I'd love to know a little bit more of the background about how it came together. But, certainly I know that is really a sore issue for the fans there because the Metro always stops before they're able to take it after a game.
And the same thing with the Nationals. I know there's been some rainout issues and some playoff issues for them, but, they get two different companies to sponsor tonight, and then the country of Qatar just, we're going to do it. Like, I can't think of an equivalent to that, but maybe I should stop looking for equivalents all the time because maybe sometimes there's just things that we're not supposed to know. We're just supposed to shake our heads and go, yeah, it's going to be okay. It's open for an extra hour.
Just ride with it. Pretend it was like an Onion headline you read.
Yeah.
Actually happened.
Yeah, but you would have, if you told me, oh, no, you read an Onion headline, I would have gone, oh, okay, that makes sense, right? That makes sense in this case. You're in Vegas, correct, for Game 3?
I am. I'm in the Bellagio right now, just awaiting a Winnipeg Jets availability. So
what's your
Jets made it here, and I made it here.
What's your go-to in Vegas? You got a restaurant, a place you go to every time you're in Vegas?
Not really. I've been down here, pretty much for every time the awards have been here. But this will actually be the first game I've covered at T-Mobile Arena. So tomorrow night will be the first time I'm actually getting to see it, with my own eyes and feel what it's like around the team. I'm not a huge gambler or anything like that. So, I don't take my personal trips down here or anything. But, it's a pretty neat place to be. And by all accounts, any discussion you've probably heard of the city getting around the team is real. I mean, you see it. You've been just walking the strip here in the last hour, Golden Knights stuff everywhere, and fans lining up outside of the arena to get free Golden Knights tattoos, actual tattoos. I mean, it's been a strange ride for this team, and now I think we're at the point where we can say it might actually go into June if they might go the whole distance for them.
Okay, hold on. I think you might be burying the lead. Did you just say that fans are lining up to get free real tattoos? We're not talking about the stick-ons for kids. We're talking about ink-on-your-body tattoos?
Ink on your body. You can choose one of two different Golden Knights logo possibilities, and they're free. And apparently they get hundreds of people lining up before every game. And often people have to come back to get the tattoo finished because there's only so much time to get working on it before the game. So it's very, very strange. But, I think it just shows it's one little small example of the some of the fervor around the Golden Knights. I think being the first in the door has proven to be really good for them in terms of professional sports organization. I know the Raiders are coming in 2 years and, we'll mount some competition for fan loyalty and sponsorships and things like that. But, they've done an unbelievable job here in their first year of creating excitement and creating a connection with the people in the city.
I am still trying to wrap my head around this. I get dedication. I understand that. I get, diehard fans, and I understand people out of their own wallet would do that for the teams they love. I know people who do that. But the fact that the team would do it for free and people would line up, that's amazing to me. That's absolutely amazing. Who's the next that did the Maple Leafs do that? Would I wonder if the Flames would do that. I mean, can you do
that? I
don't
know if anybody else would do it. I mean, really. Maybe in California or somewhere else where you have more of the climate and people can stand outside and have, their bare skin tattooed and, before a hockey game. It's unique, it's unusual.
Wow.
Like it's everything about this team and the fact that they actually have to deal with lineups, I think, is funny. It's not just one or two people are doing it on a lark. There's a huge demand for it, and people are lining up 5 hours before the game and stuff like that to be first in line.
That's amazing. Which is not really the linkage that I was going to use to get to our next story, because you're in Vegas, which is in Nevada, which is one of the, or is the only state up until yesterday that legalized sports gambling. That's not the case. Do you have a thought on the NHL and what transpired with the Supreme Court striking down the legislation on sports gambling, and the fact that New Jersey and other states may move and are quickly moving to take advantage? I know Adam Silver, the NBA, has been very aggressive and very proactive about this. Do you have any sense of how the NHL plans to react to this?
Well, you know, I think that they're generally in favor of it. And, you know, without knowing exactly what the ramifications are going to be, immediately after this move has been taken. But, you know, I think the league sees an opportunity to make some money for itself, mm-hmm. to get a cut of the action, if you will, to maybe integrate it into a fan experience at arenas, you know, somewhere down the line, you know, whether it's terminals or something. You know, I realize people can do this already on their mobile phones if they have, offsite, offshore accounts or what have you. But, you know, have it so that you can be betting in game and things like that. I mean, I do think that is likely to be the future of this. I'm just not certain how quickly that will all come to pass. But, you know, the NHL is well, maybe not as vocal about it as the NBA has been. Certainly been monitoring this, is ready for it. And you know, from what I understand, I think they're quite interested in what kind of opportunities it might open up for them to, expand what they do and you know, find new ways to reach fans and give them what they want, because this rule is this law is a long time in the past, and yeah. The reality is a lot of people that want to gamble are gambling anyway, because there's a lot of different ways you can do it in the internet age.
I'm not naive. I know where hockey fits in the grand scheme of things of gambling, but it's the technology that's going to drive it. And I'm also curious about the broadcast component. We work for a company that has a lot of money invested in the broadcasting of hockey. I'm wondering, and we've had some people on talking about it, I wonder about this format, I wonder about television, how much they could evolve or change over the coming years to try and take advantage of it, to try and complement what might be a new landscape when it comes to sports wagering.
Well, I mean, look, it makes sense to me. I mean, at the end of the day, this is entertainment. You know, for a lot of us, we take the sport seriously and we love it, and we almost elevate it beyond that. But, yeah. You know, the sport only exists as much as people are willing to pay to come see it or to consume it. From the broadcast perspective, you know, we need an audience to watch it, and to sell ads against that audience, to keep everything going. And if it does seem to me, even though it's not something I'm personally heavily involved in, that there's a lot of people out here that are doing it already and that want to have different ways to gamble on games, if it's a way for them to increase their enjoyment or their desire to watch a game if they got some stakes on it. I don't mind it, really. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest issue for the NHL and the NHLPA is, obviously you want to be very mindful of competitive issues, whether someone can get tied up in the wrong thing. You know, we've had NBA referees and point shaving. I'm not sure the game of hockey lends itself as much to being influenced by one person who might want to impact the result. I mean, certainly a goaltender might be able to do that, for example. But, I think that will be one sort of concern or an area where the NHL is going to want to be proactive and trying to make sure that the games are being played in an honorable, honest way. But once you're able to do that, I do think that there's a lot of different ways this could be integrated into the fan experience, when it comes to watching games. And I do think it's going to come quite quickly here once we sort of better understand, what the legislation being struck down means.
And I think it reminds me a little bit of an election for media companies, in a way that all of a sudden it's a windfall, because I would think that, the DraftKings and others, are going to be pumping up their advertising again, and they're going to be looking for, these types of products to put their names on. That you certainly see that, so much so in Australia, that the talk was yesterday that they had to ban the ads during the games just because it was getting to be too much. It's to me, I think yesterday was, just from a sports perspective in North America, hugely significant.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to change. It's going to change it a lot. I think it'll be noticeable, once this happens. And then who knows? Maybe there's going to have to be a correction like the one you talked about in Australia.
Yeah.
But fantasy sports have been popular, and that's, yep. A form of gambling, a little less it doesn't have the same sort of feel of someone who goes to a bookie or what have you. But, you know, I know that we launched, for example, at Sportsnet on our website this year, a playoff pool, and it's something they did. I'm sure it's going to go farther with this. And you know, it's I do think it's about time, honestly. It's a reality to act like people aren't gambling is to just be ignoring the facts. And I think to maybe regulate it in some way and have the league, you know, benefit from it is the right way to go.
He is Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, brought to you by Metro Ford, our NHL insider. A couple of off-ice, and then we'll get to the two playoff series. One, any update in Minnesota on their search for a GM? Nashville's done. I guess I was kind of waiting for Paul Fenton to just be handed the job. Is there any kind of update with what's going on there with Craig Leopold, the owner of the Minnesota Wild?
Well, they're down to two candidates, and Paul Fenton is one, and Tom Fitzgerald, the assistant GM of the New Jersey Devils, you know, someone who received some interest from Carolina as well when they did their search back in March, is the other. And, you know, I think that it's fair. You know, I'm in Vegas. If we're setting odds, I do think that it is more likely than not that Paul Fenton gets a job. But, you know, from my understanding, there's been second interviews for those two guys. And I would think, you know, where we're getting close to the conclusion here of this process, and, you know, probably as soon as early next week, you know, we're going to get a formal announcement. But, you know, it's probably Paul Fenton's job to lose just because he has a long history with Craig Leopold, who formerly owned the Nashville Predators, where Tom's worked, Paul's worked rather for the last 20 years, give or take. But, you know, Tom Fitzgerald is sort of an up and comer, you know, played in the NHL for a long time, has worked under Ray Shiro, both in Pittsburgh and taking a more elevated role since he moved to New Jersey. And, you know, it does seem as though he's now one of those candidates that's, you know, if he doesn't get this job, that you're going to hear his name again when future jobs are opened up.
The story that we talked a little bit about on Thursday was whether or not Lou Lamoriello could be seen in New York, back on the island, or in the island, I guess, working with the Islanders. Has anything shifted or changed in that storyline?
Well, nothing other than I think it's even more clear that it's likely to happen, you know, in these last few days. You know, I saw that Mike Babcock did an interview with NHL.com where he spoke openly with the fact that he'd like Lou to stay, but he doesn't know that he's going to stay. And you know, I think when you get people in that sort of seat speaking that openly, I mean, it's clear that there's more than a little smoke on the horizon here, that there is something to that. You know, I think the real question is, who has the authority? What are the titles? What's the setup? And I think that's what's going to determine whether or not this happens. I mean, Lou Lamoriello, you know, he moved to Toronto and he bought a place 3 years ago when he was hired by the Leafs. And you know, it doesn't mean so. It wouldn't surprise me, I guess, entirely if maybe this all fell apart. But you know, all the indications and the whispers are that it's going to be a done deal and that Lou is going to find his way into the Islanders front office and likely in a position of some power. You know, which I think is significant for him because we know that he's a hands-on guy. He's you know, for you know, more than 35 years now, been someone who's been in control of a hockey team or an organization. You know, it's pretty clear with the role that he would assume in Toronto, should he stay on, that you know, it'd be more of a ceremonial position, an advisory position to help Kyle Dubas out, but wouldn't be making the final calls that we do know he likes to be involved in.
One last one, and I want to get to some playoff notes, and that has to do with the Nashville Predators. I did you hear anything? Do you know where? I was a little bit stunned today when I was reading some local copy out of there that they had to put to rest P.K. Subban trade rumors. I know things get nutty when you lose a series, but P.K. Subban's not in the news, is he?
Well, I haven't heard a lot of it. I mean, there's been some low-level speculation on that. You know, certainly when Eric Carlson's name was out there and you know, Nashville was attached to those talks. And, you know, I don't know that anyone ever reported it firmly. You know, and I certainly don't have specific knowledge that PK was involved. But I think a lot of people connected the dots on that one. And, you know, I don't know exactly where this is coming from. And that was kind of the reaction, you know, I saw that the Predators had. They almost, you know, they almost just wanted to laugh. They almost didn't want to dignify it with a response. But I think you know, given the player and his history and you know, just how much fuss he causes when he does anything and his name is for anything, you know, they wanted to try to quell those rumors. you know, at some point he may be moved again. I mean, it's a position of strength. I mean, this is a team that's traded Seth Jones away and Shea Weber in the last handful of years. I don't know that we could call any players unmovable. I don't believe that PK Subban held up, maintained his no movement clause in the deal that when he came over from Montreal. When that happens, the team that acquires a player can choose to honor it or not. And I'm reasonably certain that the Nashville didn't do that. So they have the ability to trade him. I think there's certainly teams out there that would be very interested in talking about that kind of transaction. Nashville went there. I just don't get the sense that it's something that has a lot of legs at this moment. And, but it could be revisited. I mean, look at their blue line. They're going to have some decisions to make.
Right.
They've got a lot of good contracts on the books, but, guys like Ryan Ellis are coming up. Roman Yossi doesn't have much left on his deal. And maybe at some point, I mean, we've seen David Poile. There's nothing he wouldn't do to try to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, he's been at this a long, long time and has built a team that, I think had a chance this year. And if they win a game seven, they're probably the favorite of the final four remaining. So, I don't really think that there's a lot to it at this moment, but we should stay tuned on this one because, it's not an entirely impossible idea.
Okay. So I want to finish off, Chris, on both series, but I'm not going to ask you the regular, can they come back or who's looking? I got two different types of questions. So one, how much of a bullet did the National Hockey League dodge on Sunday after that missed call on Hedman that led to a Tampa Bay goal, but Washington came all the way back, and it's kind of a moot point? I know that the panel that night certainly spent time talking about it. Do we see a change in effect or something going to come into effect to mitigate those kind of just blatant mistakes? He got hit by the puck, not by the stick sort of thing.
Well, it's certainly been talked about in the past, at the Jams meeting. I think that this league, if anything, if we gave them the truth serum and asked honestly, I think that they'd like to have less video of you rather than more. So I would be surprised, at this point, if we saw video review brought in for those type of plays. And I think in a sense, it did dodge a small bullet here because the goal of Steven Stamkos scored on that power play ended up not impacting the final score of the game. But I had a chance to talk to some people in the NHL front office since then. And part of their view is that, these types of mistakes happen and have happened for a long period of time. And, I kind of get the feeling that they can live with them because they don't think that they happen that much that's really a huge issue. It's just that, it certainly gets a lot of attention. And I think that what's important to remember about that play is Victor Hedman did take the puck in the face. So, his reaction was one of what you would expect, that he maybe got hit with the stick because of the way he went down and the way he reacted. He wasn't faking or selling the call. It was one of those, bang, bang moments. And clearly the referee missed it. But I don't think that at least at this point, that the attitude of the league is that this is such a big deal. They need to try going to correct this. I think that they're willing to live with a few of these from time to time. And that's going to mean, taking some bullets. It just turned out with the way Washington, rallied after Tampa got ahead 2-1 there, that, it became less of a talking point. And I think it's probably going to die off here pretty quick.
So I've run out of things to talk about with the Vegas Golden Knights in their inaugural season. So this is what it's come to. This is a pure apples versus orange comparison for you. For me, in terms of seasons, all-time seasons, would you pick this inaugural season by Vegas, which is yet to be finished, or would you take the 81-82 Gretzky season in which he scored 92 goals and 120 points for 212 points, which wasn't his highest point total, but was, as far as I remember as a hockey fan, the most incredible season I've ever witnessed. So which would you take?
I got to go with Gretzky, I think.
It's close, right?
Individual achievement. I guess the reason it's apples and oranges because we're talking about individual versus achievements versus the team success. I mean, the numbers Wayne put up at that time were unreal. I mean, that was when he's a couple years into the league and people were just understanding how great he truly was going to be and was before the Oilers won all their cups. That's pretty special. And I think it's a mark that I just can't imagine in our lifetime the way that hockey's played now. We're never going to see anyone get remotely close to even have a conversation about beating that. That being said, I don't know that we're going to get an expansion team that ever has everything come together the way that it has for the Vegas Golden Knights. And it really is a remarkable thing. I mean,
yep.
And I don't mean this as disrespect, but, you know, I was at the game last night in Winnipeg, and you're looking at the ice, and you know, look, they played great. And they have a defense with guys like Derek Englund and Colin Miller on it. You know, it's not a bunch of stars. I mean, even Nate Schmidt had a tremendous game. You know, it was essentially their number one defenseman, and he was in there with the lineup all year last year for Washington. You know, the top line, I think enough has been spilled about them. I mean, it's still not a team full of superstars. They just play as a team. They play very fast, and they do have some high-end talent that I think shifting things for them. And obviously, Marc-Andre Fleury's helped as well this year. But, you know, it's just a special thing, and, you know, they could win the Stanley Cup. I mean, I just don't know at this point. There's no reason to doubt that possibility, and I don't know that it's likely or anything, but it's possible, and you know, that will never happen. I mean, this is like Leicester City or something in British soccer. I mean, it's the season that no one could have predicted, and you know, I think it's its own achievement. But I'll probably take Gretzky just because, you know, I don't want to disrespect Wayne.
No, but and that was where it came down to for me. Is I think that's the greatest season in sport that I ever witnessed, and then I've run out of it. I mean, everything Vegas. This is. You know, no disrespect to Rhett Warner and the Florida Panthers. That was 3 years in. Minnesota to the Western Conference, 3 years in. But they battled, and they were plucky. And they are, I guess, on some level plucky, but they're still skilled. I mean, they still, you know, you don't luck out, or they don't luck out and beat you. They can come in and beat you. And I think I don't know how else to describe it anymore. It is something amazing to watch.
Well, they don't play cynically, right? Like, they don't play the way a smaller European nation would play Team Canada in the Olympics.
Right, right.
When they're really just playing to try to win 1-0 and limit the chances and limit the power plays and those types of things. I mean, you know, Vegas skates and they forecheck. I think that's what they did so well last night. I mean, Winnipeg is a deep, deep team and fast in their own right. But, you know, the Vegas brought it to them for periods of that game and made some plays and pulled out a win. I mean, they're full value for a win like that. And, you know, that's probably what's most amazing is that it's not lucky, or it's not. They haven't ruined the game. I think that they're playing it in a, you know, a really admirable kind of way, and an exciting kind of way, and you know, we'll see if they can keep it going here, starting with the game tomorrow.
Enjoy it, sir. We will catch up with you later in the week. Thanks for doing this, Chris.
Okay, Rob. We'll talk then. Thank you.